Hey y'all, Ohio Crime Mom is back with our second episode of Mamaween. I do want to apologize, this episode should have been up last week, but as some of you know who are close with me, I suffer from horrible migraines, and actually had one that lasted, it's still kind of going on, but for about 5 days. So during that, it was kind of hard for me to read anything, and trying to record the podcast would have just been a big no. So because of that, you guys will get an episode today and then either Saturday or Sunday. Saturday, we are probably going to be taking our kid to a trick-or-treat. So we probably, depending on the time we get back, I'm not sure if we'll be able to upload on Saturday. If not, I will get it uploaded on Sunday. I also want to give a trigger warning before we jump into the episode. This episode, there will be some offensive language that I don't personally use, but to quote what was said will need to be used, as well as there will be some talk of sexual assault. So if either of those subjects are sensitive to you, this may not be the episode for you, and I will hear you later on this week. So without further ado, let's jump into the Texarkana Moonlight Murders. At 11:45 p.m., Friday, February 22nd, 1946, Jimmy Hollis, age 25, and his girlfriend Mary LeRae, age 19, parked on a road termed Lover's Lane. The area was secluded, and after about 10 minutes at around 11:55 p.m., a man wearing what appeared to be a pillowcase with eye hole cuts approached the driver's side window and shone a flashlight inside. Jimmy, confused on what was going on, informed the man that he must have the wrong person. The hooded man responded, quote, "I don't want to kill you, fellow, so do what I say," end quote. Hollis and LeRae were then ordered out of the driver's side door, and Hollis was ordered to take off his, quote, "goddamn britches," quote. After complying, Hollis was hit in the head 2 times by a pistol. LeRae thought Hollis had been shot from the sound. LeRae believed that the attacker was trying to rob them, so she showed the attacker her wallet, proving she had no money. The attacker then struck LeRae with a blunt object, which caused her to fall. She was then ordered to stand and to run. LeRae began running, but then was told to run the opposite way. While running, she stumbled upon a car, but it was empty, and at this point the attacker had caught up to her. He then knocked her down and sexually assaulted her with the barrel of his gun. After the assault, LeRae fled to the nearby neighbor's house. She waved a car down but was ignored. She awoke the residents of the nearby home and phoned the police. At the same time, Hollis had regained consciousness and had flagged down a passerby who went to the nearby funeral home to phone police as well. 30 minutes later, Bowie County Sheriff W.H. Bill Presley arrived, but the attacker was long gone. LeRae spent the night in the hospital due to a minor head wound, while Hollis was kept for several days due to multiple skull fractures. The couple had survived the attack. When LeRae was questioned, she stated that the attacker had a bag with eye and mouth cutouts and was an African American. Hollis, on the other hand, believed that the attacker was white, but also said he had been blinded by the flashlight, so he couldn't be too sure. They had both agreed, though, that the attacker was around 6 feet tall. On Sunday, March 24th, 1946, Richard Griffin, age 29, and his girlfriend Polly Moore, age 17, were found deceased in Griffin's 1941 Oldsmobile sedan. They were found between 8:30 and 9 a.m. by a passing motorist on another Lover's Lane. The motorist originally thought that the couple was asleep. Griffin was found between the front seats on his knees. His head was resting on his hands, and his pockets were found turned inside out. Moore was found sprawled out face down in the back seat. Investigators believe that Moore had been killed outside on a blanket and then placed back into the car. Both had been shot once in the back of the head. In response to these murders, a citywide investigation was launched, and by March 27th, local police had interviewed between 50 and 60 witnesses. By March 30th, police had issued a $500 reward in an effort to gain any information. And before we get any further, let's take a minute to hear from this week's sponsors. Rella's Wonder Crafts is a small, family-owned crafting business located here in Southern Ohio. They make a variety of crafts from custom shirts and tumblers to decals and wreaths, plus so much more. Since 2017, they have been creating magic and happiness by bringing their customers and visions to life. Come take a peek into their world. You can find them on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Etsy, and TikTok. And just in time for Christmas, you can get so many great things. On Saturday, April 13th, 1946, Betty Jo Booker was 15 years old. Betty was playing her saxophone at a gig at the VFW Club, and at around 1:30 a.m. on Sunday, April 14th, her friend, Paul Martin, age 17, arrived to pick her up from this gig. This would be the last time that the pair would ever be seen alive. At 6:30 a.m., Mr. and Mrs. G.H. Weaver and their son found the body of Martin lying on the left side of North Park Road. Martin had been shot 4 times. Once through the nose, once through the left 4th rib from behind, a 3rd time in the right hand, and lastly through the back of his neck. Booker's body was found later in the day at around 11:30 a.m. She was found 2 miles away and was found lying on her back, fully clothed, with her right hand in the pocket of her buttoned overcoat. She had been shot once through her chest and once through her face. The weapon used matched that of the first murder. Martin's 1946 Club Coupe was found 3 miles from Booker's body, outside of Spring Lake Park, and the keys were still inside of the vehicle. Authorities do not know who was shot first, but both parties put up a struggle. The reward was now upped and for the 4 more murders to $1,700. The rumors around town of Texarkana flew. On Monday, May 3rd, 1946, at around 9 p.m., Virgil Starks, age 37, and his wife Katie were home at their farm of 500 acres. Virgil was seated in his chair with a heating pad for his back, listening to his favorite radio show, while Katie had already turned in for the night. Katie heard something coming from the backyard and asked Virgil to turn the radio down, but just seconds later, Virgil was shot twice in the back of his head from a window that was closed and about 3 feet away. Katie did not hear the gunshots, but heard the sound of glass breaking. She went to the living room to check and saw Virgil stand, then slump back into his chair. She saw the blood and ran to him, but Virgil was already gone. Katie ran to the phone to phone the police, but after 2 cranks on the phone, she was shot in the face from the same window. 1 bullet entered her right cheek and exited from behind her left ear. The second bullet entered just below her lip, breaking her jaw and splintering her teeth, which lodged themselves underneath of her tongue. Katie was able to run to the living room, blinded by her own blood. At this point, Katie could hear the killer on the back porch and knew she was going to be killed, so she stumbled to her bedroom to leave a note. She then heard the killer in the kitchen and ran out the front door. She ran across the road to her sister and brother-in-law's home, but they were not at home, so she ran another 50 yards to the home of A.V. Prater. Prater stated that Katie said, quote, "Virgil's dead," end quote, and collapsed to the ground. Prater summoned the neighbor, Elmer Taylor, to collect his car, and Taylor and the Prater family drove Katie to Michael Rieger Hospital. Katie had lost a lot of blood, but her heart rate was normal and showed no signs of shock. So then Katie was questioned in the operating room by Sheriff W.E. Davis, who had took over the investigation. This killer has never been found, and these murders have inspired people such as Charles B. Pierce, who wrote and directed who grew up in Texarkana and wrote and directed the movie The Town That Dreaded Sundown. In 2014, a meta sequel with the same name was released. Bands, playwrights, and even TV shows have used the Texarkana Moonlight Murders for their inspiration. And that is the end of this week's case. If you've never seen The Town That Dreaded Sundown, I highly recommend that you watch it. I actually never knew it was based on something true until a few years ago. And when I found it out, I was like, I have to know more. And I looked into these murders, and it's just crazy because there was 5 people that were murdered and 3 who escaped. And it's just crazy that there was never anything that, you know, led to anyone being arrested. But with today's day and age, there's always a chance that they may be caught. So we have a new small business spotlight this week. Do you love cute and trendy clothes? Need them at a price your bank account can afford? Then you need to shop with my girl Victoria at the Trendy Gypsy Boutique. They have cute and trendy pieces at prices both you and your bank account can afford. You can find the Trendy Gypsy Boutique on Poshmark and on Facebook. And just as a reminder, keep an eye out. We will be doing our Halloween giveaway on Saturday night. Whether I get an episode recorded or not, I will have the giveaway. I will post probably Saturday morning about what time that I will be doing the live for the giveaway. So make sure you are checking in the Facebook group for chances to enter. And until next time, don't become an episode.